Honolulu, Hawaii, here at Seeker's Quest in San Jose, California, teaching astrophysics, spiritual dynamics. Tonight we're continuing on the violet flame and working to blend the heart, the throat, the brow, and moving in those areas, awakening intuitional guidance, impressional guidance, and vision, and bringing forth a clear channel in consciousness. As we do the blue triangle and the breath exercise, we want you to continue those in this next week to work with those same exercises. That's the seeing of a blue line. It goes from your throat to behind this ear, from your throat to behind the other ear, and then straight through, and it's a blue triangle, and that's the visualization. What we're doing now is we're balancing subjective-objective mind so that we can have the point of consciousness in our clairvoyance, ability to see in a balanced way, that we're not seeing all the negatives that are going to go on, we're not seeing all the positives, we're seeing the play of consciousness, meaning there's both these things going on, and you should be able to be at the top of the pyramid, so to speak, looking at those two instead of at the bottom of the pyramid. And that may, you may be thinking that because this is shaped with the point down, but there is no up or down in spirit, you'll be at the point looking down the two. You see, and so that's the first center. Then the second centering is to bring that energy in from the crown to the brow. Now what we're doing is we're converging on the brow. And by the structures we build in the first classes in the subconscious mind, we're now getting stability and a foundation to merge in a conscious way at the brow. In the instructions of spiritual teachings, there's one teaching called the six-pointed star. So you can find it in the Kabbalah. You can find it in some of the ancient mystery schools and that. And it's a simple balancing exercise, and I'm going to talk about that tonight. First of all, the first thing you meet before you ever come to the six-pointed star of that is two triads. And this is after the individual in the triad is looking to improve themselves. They find this upper triad. They find that there's ideals, there are greater things they can do and all of this, but they still haven't made the connection between the higher and lower self. And they may be predominantly in the personality or lower triad, which deals with the physical, emotional, and mental states. Now, most people go around in these three particular states, physical, emotional, mental states, and they're not aware that they have a higher mind or creative power, that they have super consciousness, and that they have spiritual consciousness in this higher triad, that they have a talent or creativeness, they have a super consciousness awareness that is aware of everything that's going on. They're not missing anything. But by the time it filters down here, they may have filtered out part of what they're seeing, part of what's going on, and they've lost part of this super consciousness. Because as a child, you're aware much more around you what's going on until you got polluted. You got too much attention on your emotions, too much attention on your mind, too much attention on your body, and you lost the awareness of watching out around you. Now that happens at age 4 and a half, that you start you losing that. Before that time, you're still the center of the universe. And if you notice children up to about 4 and a half years old, they are center of everything that's going on, and everything goes on around them, and they don't mind if you're on the phone or talking the most serious conversation in the world. They'll come up and say, Mommy or Daddy, they want attention right now. And so that's when they're still the center of creation. But they're the innocent center. They haven't been polluted. Now they start putting this garb around them, so to speak, this energy and the consciousness of their physical, their emotional, of their mental levels. And they get bound in this personality, and they lose this highly creative state, highly superconscious state, and spiritual state where they are at one. This unity state of oneness up here, where they have reached this state of being at one and the center of the universe. And so if we would look at that, it'd be like, here is the innocence, then around it comes the emotions, then around it comes the mental. And then when the individual needs to look out, they have to look through that field, and it qualifies the world. So this takes and begins to shrink them, so to speak. By the time they're around 12 to 14 years old, the human being, they get very independent at that point. And this is a natural independence, and if that's squelched at that point, then they have a problem. But they have the age of reason at 7, and then at 12 to 14, they're reaching this age of independence. In this movement, a lot of people get stuck in this lower triad, and there seems to be a block or a wall to get to the top. And they're really not aware of the soul at this point. They know that, if there is a soul, there must be something about it. It must contain something. They're not sure what it is, where it's at, how it works, or none of those kind of things. So this is what we call the searcher, the one that's looking, the one that's seeker. The seeker, the searcher, the one that's looking for this something greater than themselves at that point. In the second stage, the individual becomes a student, and they begin to realize that this higher triad, this greater thing they're looking for, is really them. They're really looking for their self as God experiencing. They're looking for their self as this great creative power, as this super conscious being. Here they have a realization that they can have these ideals. If someone else did it, I can do it, kind of consciousness. And they begin to study, how can I bring my talents on? How can I bring my super consciousness on? How can I be more aware and awake? And how can I get this out to the world, so to speak? And so then they get to the student stage. This is a natural stage of development that takes place from 14 to 21 years old. The individual starts moving into these next states of consciousness. As the individual progresses now, and they begin to study, and they study these spiritual things, they get into meditation. The meditation means that they have raised their attention out of their physical, out of their emotional, out of their mental state, and they're witnessing those states. This is the first witness, what we call the first witness state. Now, in this first witness state, the individual is seeking to take command over their physical, emotional, and mental levels. And they're aware of certain psychic powers and psychic awareness coming on. And now this is starting to penetrate. The higher and lower triad is coming together. That means the higher mind and lower mind are starting to blend. And the psyche, which is the accumulated experience of this entity here, as it is experienced through these fields, begins to awaken. And they begin to say, oh yes, I know I have intuition. Yeah, I've known things before they've happened, and I knew what was in that letter, and I knew who was calling, and I knew who was on the other side of the door, and I got myself a parking place. And these are all just the signs that those things are opening. They're just opening up. And so at this particular point of development, the individual becomes initiate, and they get physical initiations. They may find their body going through changes in that because of what they know. And they know at this point the food is their body, and they know that the way they feel makes up their emotions. They start realizing the way they're thinking makes up their mind. And from that makeup or character, they are gaining experience. In this second witness, they begin to realize experience and be aware that they are experiencing from a soul level, not from a personality level. In the Hawaiians, when this stage comes on, they call this the middle self. See, they got the lower, the higher, and the middle self. And this is called the middle self. Below this, is the lower triad is called the Ili-Pili. And it's called the Amakua, the spirit. And this is the soulful self, and I can't remember the name of it right now. But the Ili-Pili was at the bottom, and the higher self was the Amakua. And everyone had a family Amakua, they had an individual Amakua, and they had the race Amakua, meaning the spirit of the individual, the spirit of the family, the spirit of the race, so to speak. And so they were getting soulful expression at that point. This individual is very environmental consciousness. Now, it doesn't mean that these people don't have environmental consciousness, but they don't relate the same way as a soulful being relates to their environment as part of themselves. Here it's more detached. Gee, those creative powers, those other people can sing. Other here in the first stage, we say other people can sing, other people can write, other people can get those ideas and make a lot of money, but not me, you see. That's the first stage. Well, then in the second stage, when he becomes a student, say, yeah, I think I could do some of those if I had the right training and I had the right understanding. I could do that kind of stuff too. Well, over here, he begins to know in the third stage, yes, I can do it. So he's left this possibility to now I can, and is seeing how he has done it and becomes aware by witnessing the way he thinks, the way he feels, the way he acts. This is the stage, and then he starts penetrating into the creative realm, and he starts to see how he's created. Now, when the individual can take and they start getting into this creative realm from the higher self and the lower self, it starts filling the mind and the emotions and the third eye, so to speak, of the individual. There's a blending takes place in the fourth stage where the individual comes to adaptability. Now, their initiate adapts. It means they've had a physical initiation, emotional initiation, mental initiation. They realize that spirit is there physically. They realize spirit is there emotionally. They realize spirit is there mentally. And they began to realize the principles and powers of spirit and how spirit animates matter, how God animates the mind and mind animates matter. They start seeing this sequential pattern and showing how the mind has power over matter, God has power over the mind, and how these powers are interrelating, this trinity interrelates. And the individual begins to adapt these principles, spirit into matter, matter into spirit, mind to spirit, spirit to mind to matter, matter to mind. These various combinations of energy have colors. We've got the red and the yellow and the blue rays, and then we mix those together. When mind is going towards matter, it comes in an orange flame. When spirit is coming towards mind, we've got in a green flame. And when we've got spirit into matter, we've got a violet flame. And then when we have these three balanced, we have an indigo flame. And so we're actually manifesting the interplay or adaptability of the principle of the rainbow. The rainbow is no longer just something we're visualizing. It's a actual living essence, a substance to use and work with on the planet to adapt into your everyday life. You begin to understand what the principle of the rainbow is then, how you can take step by step, level by level, dimension by dimension, plane by plane, those kind of things, up the ladder, one step at a time. All of that describes the principle that is behind the rainbow bridge, which doesn't have description. At this point, it becomes abstract. Abstract principle can take action through description on the physical dimension. And so they began to take these abstract principles of love, and they start living love. Abstract principle of truth, they start living truth. Abstract principle of wisdom, and start living the wisdom, or the abstract principle of purity. And we hear the word purity, and we have an intellectual interpretation of purity, but to live purity and to have the intellectual interpretation of it is two different things. Just to interpret it doesn't mean necessarily it is a part of your life. It may be in your mind, but it's not being used in matter. And you may know that it comes from a higher source, but you're still not completing the cycle by living it, by reflecting it out into this outer world, into the illusion, and creating in this illusion. This is an illusion out here. All of this here is transitory. Everything in this room will go. Your bodies will go. These clothes will go. All of these things will go. In a matter of time, they will go. But you, the one that's there, setting in that body, emotions of mind, you will not go. You are the permanent part of this energy. So there is a part that manipulates that which is solid, and then there's a part that's free. So you're God experiencing through the mind controlling matter. Now, when you get to this point of God consciousness, as this woman was explaining to us, her point of being aware, that she was aware and there was nothing else there, like everything else was disconnected, she had reached this point of God consciousness abstracted from the body and abstracted from the mind. So you're abstracting the consciousness. Now, in the first abstraction, as we start adaptability and start merging to the master adapt, we take and we're moving in a blending of consciousness, and then we move by separation of consciousness. And so we're doing subjective and then objective field. to reach the point of where she was explaining the samadhi state, you have to have detachment. And this point is a witness that comes when the individual gets to this sixth level initiation in the second witness, what we call the second witness, which is detachment. In the first witness, the power of the first witness at the heart center, at the point of merging the higher and lower triad, this point is called objectivity. And so you're looking from a point of objectivity at your mind, at your emotions, and at your body. It means you're looking at them without getting involved in them. You're being objective to them. And then if you want to get involved, you get involved with that thought, or you get involved with that feeling, or you get involved with that action, but it's totally self-determined, or self-controlled, I should say. The second witness has self-control in it. Self-determination comes actually in the third witness state. But in the second witness state, the power is detachment. So now as we're moving from this soulful being that looks at the body and that, they began to adapt these principles by the initiations they have by practicing the teachings, putting those teachings into action, doing your meditations, doing your chanting, doing your exercises and things that we've given you. By doing those, you will have a result from that experience. If you do something, pretty soon you'll have any result from doing it. If you started lifting weights and you worked out every day, your result would be muscles in your arms, you see, if you worked with them in your arms, or if you, wherever you worked with those weights, that's where you would build up the energy, you see. So it's the same way with principle. The more you work with the principle, the more it's going to become a strength in your life, and the more you're going to be able to adapt it into your daily life, into the relationships with your family, and the relationships with your boss, and when you're meeting the people out there, when you're planning something, when you're feeling something, you're going through some emotional area. How do you adapt in a crisis the principle of calm? So this calm and this peace that the adept knows, he, through his initiation, by practicing calm, by going into that still state, going there and being still, then he has a power in them. In the subconscious mind, you know stillness. Just like you have to know to walk, you have to know how to walk before you can walk. You have to train the subconscious mind. The same way you're training the subconscious mind with the seeds of calmness, the seeds of peace, the seeds of stillness. So then when the critical situation comes up, instead of flying off the handle or going some other way, you take and you apply the principle of calm. Now, in that calm, you'll notice that your body is breathing a certain way, that you're feeling a certain way, your mind is doing a certain thing, when you're in the state of calm in your inner field. And then what you do is you need to will that state and desire that state and take action in that state to have a physical experience. But if you're not willing or to have the desire or ready to take the action, this beautiful calm will never come into being in a physical dimension. You have to will it. It's your free will choice to say, okay, instead of reacting this way, now I'm going to put calm in. I'm going to react calmly here. And so you've changed the way you've done things before. Now you're getting more self-control. You are getting to master your own mind, emotions, and body. You get control over them because they're given to you for you to control. They're your bodies, they're your emotions, they're your mind, and they're under your dominion and under your control, you, the soulful being, controlling. And you'll know from this soulful and soul energy of spirit here that you are controlling these levels. Now, some people start working psychic power over these planes and over the physical dimension, and they start running their energies down, and they don't complete this movement of the six-pointed star, the blending of the higher and lower triad. And you can get stuck in any one of these stages. I know some people are still they know all that great stuff is there and everything, but they haven't had the experience of it yet because they haven't put it into action, so they've never reached this stage. There's some are still looking. Well, I'll go try this teacher out, or I'll go try that teacher out. And they're running from teacher to teacher, guru to guru. Next thing you know, you find they're groupies. You know, they're following every guru. So they got these groupies running around. Oh, yay, this guru's in town. It's so wonderful. It's so wonderful. And then he leaves, and then he goes, they run down, because they got a charge from him while he was here, but they didn't keep up the practices, so they never made the connection. They never blended or brought that to their experiences or were able to adapt the principles of the teacher that had come through to show them. And next thing you know, they're looking for another teacher and another one, and then that charge wears off, and then they get another one, that wears off. And see, unless you practice it yourself, are willing and have the desire and take the action, none of these principles can come into action. See, it takes a free will choice on your part to put the power into action. It takes your free will choice to be calm where you were at a storm before, you see, to have peace where you had war before, you know. And that's quite a change. Where you got upset before, now you have loving thoughts rather than negative thoughts towards the individual. You start reversing polarities. You start reversing polarities. You use the will on yourself. You use the desire on yourself. You use the actions on yourself rather than try to put your actions, your desires, or your will on somebody else. Now you reverse the polarity. You get it going in the right direction. Because the will is to use on yourself, and the desires are to use on yourself, and the action to use for yourself. You can't walk for somebody else, and you can't feel for somebody else, and you can't think for somebody else, you see. You become the villain if something goes wrong then. You're the one that's wrong, see. And some people try to trick you into telling them to do something, so if it goes wrong, then they can blame you. And you've had some people like that. I've worked with people like that and say, well, if you say it's okay, I'll do it then. No, I'll say, no, no. If you say it's okay, you do it. then later, you'll be able to be more self-reliant and depend on yourself. Because if it goes wrong, you're going to blame me, you see. If I say yes, and they go, they don't know that someone knows those things, you see. But we all know those, but we don't always put it into action. We're not willing it, we're not desiring it, not taking action. So the initiate adapt here, this is a very critical stage, because the individual can get stuck here. And the stuck here is called the dark night of the soul, when they're going to that adaptability, because they've had a lot of teachings and everything. They've had a lot of awareness, and they know that there's those things up there, and they know there's a great help on the earth, but then they're not too sure about it. They're not sure about the people here. Is this guy telling me the right thing, or is this the teacher that's telling the right thing, or is Buddha right, or is Christ right, is Krishna right, or is George McGillicuddy that's coming up the road here, is he the right one? Who is the right one, they're saying. See? And then they're saying, well, I don't know about God. Is there only one God? Is there different gods? Is he light? Is he energy? Is he consciousness? Is he awareness? Or is he nothing or everything or something? Or what is that? And so that's the dark night of the soul. And now you can go through that in a moment, or you can take years to go through that. Now, I went through it for 2 years, so I know what I'm talking about the dark night of the soul. And I went through that for 2 years, from 1972 to 1974. And I wasn't sure of the higher things, the lower things, and I was stuck. And I wasn't sure who. I was thinking every teacher come along wanted to get me. See? Oh, they're trying to get me and get control over me. You see? When actually what I was seeking was to get control over myself. So naturally when I'm looking for control over myself, I'm looking through that in my aura, so I was putting that on everybody else too. You see, one thing, you don't put your faults on others. And in that stage, you just may do that. Oh, they're looking for control over me, when really you're looking for control over you. But you're looking through that and superimposing it on someone else. So see, you can start looking through your aura by those experiences and put those things on other people. That's why you need this energy moving inwardly and upwardly rather than down and out. And you've heard people, oh, they're down and out. Oh, they're really uplifting. They're really in. They're uplifting. You know, that's the motion. You're going inward in consciousness, upward in consciousness. Inward in consciousness, upward in consciousness. You've started to make the balance here at stage 3, where your mind is penetrating your higher mind. And higher lower mind is coming together. And here we're starting to penetrate desire and higher desire. The vision of the Immaculate Conception with the vision. Now, here at this stage, we began to find out when we start talking about things, they start coming into being. Here at this stage, we start thinking about them and they come into being. Here at the fourth stage, the third stage is where we think about them and they're coming into being. In the fourth stage is where we start seeing it and it comes into being. So you have to be careful as you're purifying and blending that you keep balanced, positive and negative, your male and female polarities in your body to balance the male and female. And that can be very difficult, because I've seen men go all the way the feminine wave, and I've seen women go all the way the masculine wave, and start doing everything, even dressing like the man and all that, or the man dressing like the woman, going all the way over to the point of one leader of a New Age group went out there and changed his sex to female. So he was a man all his life, and then he went and he had an operation, now he's a female. You see? Before that he was called a homosexual, now he's called something else. You see? But he's still doing the same things that he was doing, and he's thinking he's getting away with it, but see, his organization's having a lot of trouble and problems because of that. So I've been watching him for about 8 years as a cosmic cop, and watching how that organization was doing, and I knew what was going to happen, and I told the people in the beginning there what was going to happen to that man because of what he was doing. You cannot break the law of polarity and expect to have it work for you. You can't manipulate it. That's a willful thing to manipulate that law. And so you must get this balance, ability to be passive and assertive. That's the control over your male and female polarities. The ability to be passive or assertive and do it at will. That is the control of the male and female aspect. Not acting like a woman or acting like a man, but the control is what you're looking for. And so the control over male and female polarity is, on the female side, is to be passive, receptive energy. On the masculine side, to be assertive, broadcasting energy. And if you don't have this balance, when you get something, you won't give it. See? If you're receiving it on your passive side, if you're receiving the love and that from higher consciousness, but then you're not giving that out, the male and female polarity isn't balanced, you see? Or if you're taking more than you're giving, you're out of balance. Or if you're trying to give more than you're taking, you're out of balance. You see what I mean? So this passive and this assertive energies have to be balanced in order for this triad to go correctly, straight up, instead of off to the side, or start, you know, you get something else going. You don't get a six-pointed star. You get a square, some other symbol out of this, you see, because you're not balancing. If these two go up off-center, you'll have something like this going on. You'll have a triangle over on this side, and you'll have another one over there. You see, you'll go square, and you won't be blending the energy, you see. So that can happen. People can shoot all the way through and create a diamond before they're ready for the diamond, you see. Some can go through and push their way through and try to take the kingdom by storm, and they'll push right through, and they will never hit the point of balance. They'll go right past it. And then they become very religious fanatics, and nothing to the earth matters at all. I mean, they don't even take care of their body or their home or none of this stuff. And they go out and they expect everybody else, because they're spiritual, to take care of them, you see. And that all they want to do is be with God and do spiritual things, you see. So they can get fanatic on the other end, or they can be in a state where they're separate from it and they're all earth. But unless we keep this male and female polarity, this balance, when we learn about the law of love, the adapt then starts adapting it, and he starts loving everybody. I love you. Yes, I love you. I love you. I do. I love you. I love you. He starts giving it. I love you. Oh, I love you. You know I love you? Can you feel it? I love you, huh? So you feel it. Start giving this love. Start giving this love. Hugging and all the things that go along with your expression of love, because you're getting it from the higher consciousness. You're saying, well, that's the where, to be giver, to be open, and to be accepting, and okay, I adapt that principle of love now into my life. And I start living love, I start living peace, I start living truth, I start living wisdom, you see? And it now becomes a fact of life, because you are living it. And it's not what may be so, or what I'm trying to work towards, or some ideal off that we're not living. It's something we're actually doing here in the physical dimension. And so when you learn those principles of higher consciousness, it's so important to put them into action. Be willing and have the desire and put them into action. Immediately start adapting them. If you learn that there's one step at a time, if you're making a plan to go on a trip, you say, okay, here's the first step. We take care of all the physical things. Now, how does everybody feel about this? Get to the emotional things of it. Now, does someone else got another goal or plan or some other way, a side trip or something we want to take? Okay, fine. The little one says that. No. Wife says, okay, no, okay. And we get that all in there. Everybody's agreeing. Now, do we got everything we need to survive out in the environment? You got your coat and you got your hat, you know, you get, see? How it works. Now, do we have something we can play along, you know, some game we can play along the way, counting telephone poles or seeing how many these kind of cars of this color you see, or name all the animals you see on the trip or something. Give the kids something creative to do, and you're doing something creative. Maybe all sing together or something, you see? Now, and you're all individuals going on this trip now. Everybody be sure and enjoy yourself, individual. And we're all doing this together, unity. Now we've got the whole rainbow into the trip, you see? And we've taken and adapted the principle, physical, emotional, mental, psychic, creative, individual, universal. We've adapted that into the structure, so now we'll have success, you see, because we have a solid thing. Or if we're building a house, you know, we've got to have these solid. Right away, I had one ultimate goal, and I gave up all other goals. And as a mystic, as a spiritual mystic, my objective is to be one with God constantly. And so everything that I learn is to be adapted towards that oneness. To see, be one with God. And to walk with God and talk with God and to think as God thinks and to take the actions that God would take and know what God knows and those kind of things. See, here we're giving up just our lower body for the higher body, and we're starting to get a blend here. Now we're starting to give up our lower mind for our higher mind. Here we're giving our lower emotions for our higher emotions, or lower desires for higher desires. You see? You're starting to see this? Now we're starting to give our body for the body, the higher body. Giving the lower body for the higher body, that's what the master does. He sacrifices his lower body for his greater body. He sacrifices his personality for his spiritual body to live and move and have his ability. Now here the master is living the principles, is living the power, living the practice. It is now a living power. See, he's not just desiring it. Now it is action. Now in the fifth stage, he begins to blend his body with the body and realize, you do the least to me, you do to all of me. You do the least, you do to all. You begin to have this blending, and through the master adapt, he begins to blend, and that's at the throat center. That's the fifth level of initiation. The individual has got to this level. See, desire of the heart doesn't come until you get to the fourth level. Desires of the heart here are always transitory and changing. Here they're undefined. Here you only know what you've experienced, and so you can only desire this. Now you get desire of creativity. Anything can be adapted here, and you can have the adaptability of your heart. Here you are living the life. It is no longer desire, no longer will, no longer an action. It is you are doing that. You are love. You are truth. You are wisdom. You are purity already. You see, it's not something to gain. It's a blending. You've already got it. And you're now using it in every situation. You're using it for your business. You're using it for your relationships. You're using it for your God-conscious states and to reach meditation and deeper levels. Here we start entrancing. See, we've only started meditation as third level. In the fourth level, we start trancing. In the fifth level, we're entranced, going to channeling stages, where we start channeling the information from the higher fields. Now, as the second witness manifests in consciousness, and we penetrate the third eye, we're looking in to the spiritual kingdom. And we're able to see in the spiritual kingdom, and we're able to see the unseen of the physical. We began to be aware of the unseen of the physical. Molecules, atoms, and all the structure of the physical, electromagnetics, gravity, all of these kind of things, heat and light and life and those kind of things, we began to have a penetration of insight into those subtle levels, and we have the penetration insight into heavenly fields. And now we have the six-pointed star, where we become the master of masters. Here we become detached and fully subjected at the same time. We have complete detachment and complete subjectivity in balance. We can get completely subjective in the spiritual energies, or we can get completely detached to focus on one minute particle. Are you getting this? The greatest or the least? The alpha, the omega, the beginning, the end. you've come to this point of consciousness. And see, you were giving not my body, but God's body, not my desire, but God's desire, not my will, but God's will, not my soul, but God's soul, not my creative power, but God's creative power, not my being, but God's being. Now you're God being, master of masters, working on the earth. And now to interlock it, not my knowledge, but God's knowledge. You're giving up everything you know, all the limitations of your intelligence, and surrendering to God. And you get a point of realization. I am God experiencing. A dot comes. A blue dot comes. I'm God experiencing. The Atman, the spirit body, the monad, the seed atom, that structure comes to consciousness, and you start becoming aware, I am eternal, everlasting being, experiencing here. I'm not limited by the things I know, and I'm not limited by my awareness of the all-pervading either. Through God's grace, I can have all things. Now I'm the spiritual master. See, down here is the laborer. Here we're starting to get into the management, but now here we get up into the spiritual aspect. Here we still got physical management kind of energies, physical mental. See, but now we've come to a spiritual being. We're possessed by spirit. We have nothing on earth to bind us. All of our things we're storing in heaven, where there's no rust and those kind of things. We're doing good deeds. We've surrendered to service to humanity, service to the world. We're selfless, boundless. No more things of the earth can hold us in any way. You see? So you're moving from this stage of being a master of masters. At this point, to move from master of masters, you have to teach other masters. Those that are coming along the way. Those that are master adapts here. And you have to start teaching them how to adapt this power of their higher consciousness into their lower triad. And you have to teach them how to blend that before you can become a master of masters. See? And you're starting to, when you start teaching others in that way, then you start having spiritual insight into the deeper things of the world. See? Now, just the skin doesn't stop. You can look inside the body, too. You can look in there and see the bones. You can see the organs in there. You see? See the blood. You can see the respiratory system. You can see the skeleton system. You can see them with clothes, out clothes. See, if you don't have sexual balance here, you'll be staring at a bunch of bodies, you see? You'll be wanting to look at all the men's bodies if you're a woman, or a woman's bodies as a man. You'll be all curious at all their different shapes and forms, sizes, and you thought they were all the same, you see. You know? But we are the same. We all have two legs and two arms and a torso here and a head. It's got hair growing on it. Most of us have hair growing on it. Some of us have higher foreheads than others. Don't want to leave somebody out. But we all got the same equipment to use. We've got two eyes, and we've got a nose, we've got a mouth, we've got ears. We've got the same equipment to use. Now, there was a man, and he was born blind. Until he was 46 years old, he never saw anything. And they had an operation that could cure him. So what happened was, they fixed his eyes. And guess what happened? He couldn't make an association between the smell and the feeling and that of the flower with the color and the brightness of it. There was two different things. They didn't blend in his consciousness. He got his eyes, but where he would take in before, just go across the street with his cane and that, because he could hear how close the car was. Now that he could see him, he was frightened to death by them. Wow, you know, he's trying to follow all these cars, and he was almost panicked. And so he went and he put dark glasses on and took his cane, and that's the way he could get across the street, because he couldn't cross the street with his sight. And finally, you know what he did? He went in and he turned the lights out in his house and he put dark glasses on and he wouldn't use his eyes. Because he couldn't blend them in. He wasn't trained that way. He was trained in touch and hearing and smell and feeling closeness and farthest with another sense. And his eyes were hindrance to him rather than a benefit. And we think, oh, gee, that... wouldn't it be wonderful if that blind person could see? That might be the worst thing for them. You see? And so we may say, oh, well, gee, you know, well, there's blind people too, and there's people who can't speak, and there's people who can't hear. But we all have the same equipment. When I get hearing tests, they say this ear is perfect. a third of the eardrum is gone in this ear. And they say, how can you hear in that ear? I says, well, there's an etheric eardrum in there. My grandmother put it in there and told me about it, and so I could hear. And so I hear in this ear just like I hear in this ear, even though a third of it's gone. There was a fellow over in Hawaii, came with Reverend Schombach, and he had an eye out. When he was 12 years old, he got his eye poked out. And when he was about 16, he went to a revival and he asked God to see through that socket. And guess what happened? He started seeing through the socket, and there was no eyeball there. And so here he is, he's now in his 40s and doing this, and he has a miracle ministry down south somewhere, and he's over there in Hawaii, and so they put a wad of dough over his eye, and he put cotton over his eye, and he do this eye all up and everything, and leave this other eye open, he takes out his glass eye that he has in there, and there's a socket. And people bring things up written on a piece of paper, and he says, don't make these notes very long. It's best to bring some with a number on it or something like that. And he's there reading them. And there was about 60 people in this line, and they're all going, oh, how's he doing this, see? There's no eye there, but he prayed, and he got sight through a socket. No eyeball. So we're not bound by these senses. These senses are only for the physical dimension, and they have no power in these higher realms. When you're in these higher realms, like in the fifth initiation or sixth initiation, when you're becoming a master, or master of masters, now you start adapting principle and power of all possibility from a higher dimension into action on the physical. You now bring spirit into matter. And your senses isn't why you see the world. You don't see your world through the senses any longer. See? Now you're starting to see it through your spiritual senses. Clairaudio, clairvoyance, extrasensory perception. These kind of things, these kind of powers. You start looking with those powers rather than looking with the physical eyes. When I look with clairvoyance now to everyone. And I look and I see their mind, I see their emotions, I see their aura. I see in their bodies, I see all of these things are all separate there in my consciousness and in my awareness, but the physical eye sees a solid body standing out here, you see. That I'm not fooled by the physical eyes because I'm watching now with spiritual eyes. I'm looking with spiritual eyes, I'm listening with a spiritual ear. And so when I'm on radio or TV, I'll read auras over the air and people will be thousands of miles away sometimes. I was on KGO and reading people out in Renton down in Southern California. People calling up and say, well, read my aura. And I said, well, I'll do better than that. I'll tell you what's in your room where you're standing right now. You know, like there was one fellow, I says, oh, there's an overstuffed chair there. There's a lamp right next to it, and you're setting it. Oh, yes. I says, you got one of those push-button type phones. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do. I says, and it's a beige. Yes. And then there's a real quiet on the other end. I says, you okay? Are you still there? Can you really see that? Now he wants to know how I'm seeing this, you see. At first I had to go through the description of it for him. That's not seeing with physical eyes, that's with the spiritual eyes. You have no limitation like you do with the senses. And so when you get into these higher stages, when you start getting this adaptability, or you get into this master-master, or you go to the spiritual master stage, now you are taking and you're no longer using the senses of your body. You're using psychic senses or you're using spiritual senses. And that's the power you want. Did you know that all knowing is a sense of universal mind? To have access to all knowledge? To have wisdom? Instant wisdom? Divine wisdom? Here, when you're reaching into this, you're using divine intuition, divine wisdoms, rather than your own. You're using words of knowledge, using universal healing powers, not just your own consciousness, not your own psyche. You're using universal powers. You're using cosmic forces at these levels. And you're using light and energy, power. You're using truth and love and wisdom. And these are living essences, living substances. Just as this chair is solid, that is solid and can control things on the physical dimension. Didn't you always have somebody in the family, even though everybody else was arguing, to walk over there and create a calm pool and say, all right, let's all settle down now, let's all stop this. And they might have said, wait! Now let's all be quiet.
And everybody stops for a moment and gets their attention. Okay, now let's all be still. Okay, and then everybody sits down, you know, are calm, you see. And there's someone that can come in and do that in your family. Or there's someone come in and everybody's happy and can blow the whole family apart. You know? They can blow up and bang and next thing you know, everybody's flying apart. You see? Because that person is relaxed and has their open aura to that individual. The thing is, at these higher states, you are opened. At these first three stages, you can have certain closeness. But when you start getting to the fourth stage of initiation adaptability, you have to start staying open more until you're completely open in stage seven. There is no closing anymore. And there is only one way. God's power over all. That's the only way there is. Universal power, the power of God. The power of God's love is more powerful than all other love, because all other love comes from that font of love. God's love. Now you know God's love, and you start sharing that. It's different than sharing personality love and stuck down here in the ego and not knowing what's going to happen and not sure about your creativeness or your principles and powers in action upon the earth, your own self-control and that. Here now, you're at these higher stages, you're in this spiritual kingdom. Now let's talk a little bit about some of the powers there. First of all, the power called clairaudio, well, let's start at clairsensory. Clairsensory is to get a clear sense of something. Now, we talk about the senses like touch and smell and hearing and seeing and taste, those five senses, we talk about them. But the principle of sense is to be able to perceive something clearly, to make sense of it. It makes sense to me. So clairsensory is getting clear sensing about that. You have no obstructions now. You don't have your old feelings, your old thoughts, your old actions in the way of sensing clearly about something. You have free sense. It is not bound by the sense of smell or taste. It has a sense that is omni. It's everywhere, present. It has a power everywhere, a sense that's everywhere. Now, to get a kind of an idea of that, you all must have a favorite restaurant or recipe. Okay, now, it may be a particular type of food. And as we start thinking about that food, we can start sensing what that food is. See that? Now, we're not fooled because it isn't here right now, present here. But it is available. It's available in mind, it's available in emotions, and it's also available in the physical dimension. You see? And so if we're sensing clearly, if it's in this vicinity, we're going to sense it's in this vicinity. See? We're going to know it's here if we have clear sensing. Now, we haven't tasted it yet, we haven't smelled it yet, we haven't seen it yet, we haven't heard it yet, we haven't touched it yet, but we have a clear sense it's here. Now, that's clear sensory. And the more you get into the principle of sensing, rather than in the type of sensing, the clearer you will become in clairsensory. It means clear sensing, clairsensory, the ability to sense clearly. Now in clairaudio, the same way that we were able to taste that dish momentarily, we could taste it in our mind. Some might even have a chemical change in their mouth to have a taste in their mouth of it. You see? In Poland, they had an experiment, an ESP experiment, where the individual stayed in the back of this other man behind a closed glass, and he would smell things or eat things, and the fellow was facing the other way, setting up on the other side of the glass, would get the signal of what it was, and then he would tell the other doctors out there that were doing this experiment. So here was this one fellow, and he would smell pepper. And the guy that was sitting out there, he had a clear sense that guy was smelling pepper. And then the guy ate some garlic, and he had a clear sense it was garlic. And he ate some sugar, and he had a clear sense it was sugar. And he kept saying, every time that fellow ate something, this guy was enjoying it, you see. Did you ever sit there and enjoy something before it was made? That's sensing it, you see, clear sensing. You're sensing the essence of it, not the solidity, physical dimension, you've got the metaphysical part of it. You see? So it's not limited to time or space or circumstance. You can do that anytime. You can stop any time of the day and think of chocolate cake and muster up the sense of chocolate cake in your consciousness. If you do it strong enough, someone will bring you chocolate cake, you see? Or bring it to you, yeah, because you're holding that sense. See? Common sense, good sense, clairsense, different areas of sensing. Physical senses, mental senses, psychic senses, spiritual senses, different levels of sensing. The next thing is that clairaudio. Now you can hear frequencies with your physical ear. But if I'm concentrating and someone blows a dog whistle, I will get a sense of the dog whistle. I will hear it. Not in the way I hear vibrations coming across the ethers, hitting my eardrum, hitting a bone back there, which presses on a nerve, which changes the chemical action in there and gives me an impulse in the brain that's released in my mind that gives me aware of hearing a particular vibration. I'm not talking about that kind of hearing. That's a physiological hearing. I'm talking about clear hearing that doesn't need to be bound by time, space, and circumstance. Can you hear the way your mother said, I love you? Can you hear the way your father said, I love you? That's part of clear hearing. But if you say, well, I can't hear that because I don't like what they did here, or I don't like what they did there, now you don't have clear hearing. See, because they said they love you at some time, but you may have got all these other things in the way, I can't hear it. See, now you don't have clear hearing. See? You recited your times tables. If you want to know what 9 times 9 is, doesn't a voice come back, an impression inside, say, 81? You see? Now you have clear hearing. See? But if you say, now I wonder what that is, let me figure that out, it isn't clear. You're trying to figure it out now. So you never got to the point of recall of those vibrations, that sound again. Now, it's also listening remotely to concentrate on your room, you know. I could tell who has been in my room and what time of the day they've been in here by concentrating on the Akashic light in there. I'll listen to it. And everybody has a frequency. Everybody has an individuality, and they're vibrating at their individuality. And so every individual is unique. No two individuals are vibrating at the same rate of speed, you see. Even a medium stops their vibrations to receive the other vibrations. They don't parallel the other vibrations. They don't try to tune their vibration with the other one. They become selfless, quiet, still, so they can pick up the other vibration. So when someone touches something, like a doorknob or something, their vibration is there. Immediately you get awareness, so-and-so touched this, so-and-so was in this room. You get the awareness. Now, in the Wicca craft, witchcraft that I studied, we made fetch. Now, fetch was to create a part of the mind when I was studying Wicca, which I don't do anymore, because I have much easier ways of doing it now. But then, when I was younger and I was learning those things, I would take a part of my mind and I would disassociate it with the rest of my mind, and in that part, I would give it a character. Wait. And that character would live on something. It had such a duration, last so long, and it had a specific purpose, and it was part of me. So I had these little mini hoonies, and you might have saw them, that stands up on my harmonium, and that they're little rubber dolls. Well, I put this fetch in this little rubber doll above my door, and then I let this couple take care of my house and my son. And I wanted to see what their interplay would be. So I let all that part, this fetch, absorb all the vibrations of the room and report to me immediately upon my coming back, to absorb back into my mind and have full recollection of what went on there, you see. So I was creating this fetch and I was doing this kind of thing. Now I don't have to do that. I'm in universal mind strata, so I don't need to play around with those lesser things. When you're in the personality and you can't get to the universal strata, then you do other things. So I'd come back and then I'd tell them everything that they did in there. I'd say, well, you were over there by the ironing board here about 3 days ago and you were arguing about this and that, and afraid that I was going to see this or that when I came back, and they go, how do you know those things? You see, there is no time or space. It's a mental concept. In spirit, you're not bound by it. And so you're not bound by time or space or circumstances, anything that's gone on before. Now you have all possibility. So this individual has been going along sick. They've had this particular kind of bacteria or this virus or this kind of disease. This has been going on. Spirit says, I'm not bound by the repetition of that and what has gone on. Now we accept perfect healing. And from the spiritual point of view, wow, that healing takes place at that very moment.
I lost the whole thing.
But if the individual's not open to it, they may go right along with that other progression. But then they'll say, well, see, this person prayed for me, and it may take them a week before they believe you. You see? Then all of a sudden they start believing, and they start reacting out of all possibility rather than repetition of past experience. You see what I'm saying? And then they start getting better. And they start getting well. Some people accept you right away, and they get instant healing. See, other people, it may take a week or 10 days or a month or hours before that will sink in, so to speak. But in spirit, I know that God heals right now. He's not going to take no time. He doesn't need time. And so I know that that power is right now, and I have that power of knowing, and nothing can throw me off that center because I've seen that action. I know that. I've had experience of it. I have direct knowledge of that. No one can say, you can't do that. I've seen it done by more than just myself. I've seen others do this too, and I've seen it happen in my own life. That's that instant healing. So I'll hold that center. When the other individual, every time they pay attention to me, will keep being drawn more and more to that center. And the more they accept me, the more they're open, because I'm already open, the more they'll merge with that, the more they'll get that healing, you see? So when you pray for healing or you see a situation a certain way, you don't take it back. See? Don't take it back. If you accept good, don't take it back. Don't be fooled because you don't have instant manifestation. Accept it now, instantly, and hold to it. See? Take your faith in the word, take your faith in the power, whatever you want to call that. There's so many different ways of describing it. Once you say it, that's it. There was a teacher, his name was Kenneth Copeland. You might have heard of him. He's an evangelist for Christian. And he was running a prayer line. And there was a young girl brought up there, and she had some kind of nervous disease. And she was, her hands were crumpled up, and she was shaking. And she couldn't speak, and couldn't express herself, couldn't feed herself. And here she's 18 years old. And they've done everything. So now they've... And all these doctors that can't find out, they've tried this, tried that, and all this. So they finally bring them to Kenneth Copeland. So the father brings her out there, and he prays for her, and he does laying on of hands, and all she goes the same way, off the stage. She's sitting down there on the same way. So the father, he gets mad, and at the end of the service, he comes back, and he takes his daughter back to Kenneth Copeland's room, his dressing room. He says, look at her, she hasn't changed yet. And Kenneth says, the first thing he says, I didn't take it back. I didn't take it back. He says, and I'll never take it back. He says, as far as I'm concerned, she's healed in Christ the healer right now. Don't be fooled by the world. He says, don't be fooled by this appearance. The next morning when the girl wakes up, she's now, her nervous system is healed. She comes downstairs and asks her mother for breakfast. The first words out of her mouth is it breakfast time, mother? Now the mother melts down, the father melts down, his father is crying, praising Christ and God and all this. See, here was the transmission from the spiritual individual to her, and he never took it back. He held firm in it. And if he's like a lot of us, after that he left that prayer meeting, that's when he really prayed. Because we go home, we get in front of the altar, we pray, and oh God, you know, you saw the case here. You know what this individual needs? Break through that, you see. Yeah, when they're ready to have this healing, let it rush in there and heal them. You know, and you're praying, and you're down your hands and knees, and you've got their names there and in your prayer room. And so if you come to my office, you'll see that I got a prayer room, I got an altar, I've got names there, I've got all of my rituals that I do there, and at one place, see, where it's not affected by others. And every one that has spiritual teachings and is working with them, you'll find them have a place like that. Muktananda had his little place that he stayed in, and nobody else went in there. It was nice and quiet and still, and only certain people he invited into it. And the same way with many of these Christians, men that I hear over here, Jimmy Swaggart has a prayer room, And the fellow has the 700 Club, whatever his name is, and he has a prayer room too, you see. And they have these, Oral Roberts has his prayer room, and, you know. And Satyananda has his prayer room, and the Dalai Lama of Tibet, he has his prayer room, you see. Where do you go to continue the prayer, you see, to continue the intercession? So there's still prayer going on. So the next morning, here she is healed, because the prayer went on, you see. It had to penetrate, it had to penetrate. And it had to penetrate years, 18 years of the other way, to reverse that, to change it another direction. I saw a fellow over there, he had Parkinson's disease, he's in the wheelchair, man lays his hands on him, and he's up. He's walking up and down in front. He said, how long has he been like this? 7 years he's been in this wheelchair. Now the guy's up and he's walking back and forth for the first time. In the spiritual consciousness, in the higher areas, you are not bound by the laws of the transitory plane. The first law that you transcend is parental law. Now when you came into this time, and in this faith and circumstance, you had parents, and they had
all. End of part 8.1. Blessings of light. Have a wonderful day. May God's great and Holy Spirit guide you. May you live and move and have your being in the light. We pray for your powers to manifest daily.